Vortex Dump and LA Center Studios. It's the Life Changer.
Look at the bright lights. Look at the bright lights.
We'll with be tonight's guest, architect.
Look at the night sky. Look at the night sky. Where the stars are
shining. I am Mark Lejeune, and I'm our host, the MC, Master James.
Well, you said rotondi, you might as well have said portaggio, but nonetheless, thank you. I appreciate that. And I have been so looking forward to meeting Michael and having this conversation on the show. And I had no idea leading up to the show that I would want to share how much as a child I enjoyed going to the hospital. Seriously, I was born in Monterey, California. And if anybody knows the community hospital in Monterey, they know how beautifully it is designed. So when my parents were visiting their friends who were sick, I would enjoy walking around the hospital. It was all very light. It was the design was so incredible. It still is, actually. And they had this big square pond with fish in the pond, and I would enjoy sitting and watching. It was so peaceful, and it was a hospital. I didn't find out until later that not all hospitals were like that. And the majority of the hospitals that I visited after that were nothing like that. And I sometimes would think, I wonder if it would be different for the people visiting or for the people being in the hospital, if the architecture, if the design were different, if they would heal faster, if they would feel better going to visit their friends and loved ones in the hospital. And it's interesting because I could extrapolate. I actually used to like, when I first moved to Los Angeles, driving around Beverly Hills and Bel Air and looking some of the beautifully architected homes, at least on the outside, the big, large homes. And I finally had many opportunities to visit. I had friends that either had large homes or worked in large homes or were friends with people with some of these large homes. And I remember the very first time I went into one in particular, well, the first one that I went into, I couldn't wait to leave. I remember the very first one, I walked in the house and I thought, well, when does the indoors start? I felt like I was still outdoors when I was in the house because the cement from the outside translated into the cement on the inside. And the way it was structured, it just felt like I was on the outside the whole time. And I never felt comfortable in there. Then I remember being in another large home, and I remember, my voice can be boisterous, I understand, but I remember feeling like I had to whisper, like I felt so uncomfortable that the sound kept reverberating, and I just couldn't wait to leave there too. And not all large homes are designed like this, but I couldn't help but think, what is it like living in that home? And life must not be fun, or it has to affect those people. I don't know how much of that we're going to be able to get into because there's so much to talk about with our guest, Michael Rotondi. But I know that his focus, especially with having founded Roto Architects, his focus is on real world projects for the future of work, the future of play, the future of learning, and the future of care, which is all in there. And I know he'd have so much to say on that subject. And a little later on, looking forward to live music from a musical guest that we've had on the show before and we couldn't wait to have back, Liz Fole, all on the Life Changes Show when we come back after this.
You are listening to the Life Changes Show. You can hear tonight's show and all our past shows, which include luminaries such as The Green Children, Dan Millman, Hot Rod Fuller, and Mike Marino on our archive page at lifechangesnetwork.com. You can also follow us online via Twitter at Life Changes Show and Facebook at The Life Changes Show.
Well, I am Filippo Voltaggio, and I'm sitting here with Mark Leisure. And Mark, I didn't think about this until just now, but I remember being in one of your really big houses and it being not only really comfortable, but really amazing and just a beautiful space to be in.
Well, thank you for that reflection or memory. But the you know, I was thinking about how much I admire Michael and how what a blessing it's been to get to know him in this age of transactions and track homes and sell as fast as possible, build and sell, right? Yet when you look back at architecture and all of the, you know, monolithic structures and the sacred geometry and the most beautiful creations on this planet have an energy, have a space, and have a forethought and a future proofing to them. And that's what he's so good at is connecting energetically with where the inhabitants want to go in their futures.
Very nice. And that's why he's here. He's internationally recognized architect, educator, principal of Roto Architects, and actually so much more. Welcome to the show, Michael Rotondi.
Thank you. Great pleasure to be here.
Pleasure to have you. And Michael, when did you first discover that you were interested in spaces and lines and how people live and work within them?
The first time I remember being asked that question and having an immediate answer that came out like a burp. I think after I was born, I was in an incubator for 4 months.
Wow.
Yeah, I was 3 pounds, 8 ounces, so I was really tiny. But I was actually riffing on being in the incubator and looking at how it was made and thinking
you
that
remember
I was,
this?
No, I don't actually remember. I was basically assuming that I did.
Okay.
I think we're.
I don't know.
Even though we're not conscious of all the experiences we're having, our body still remembers it. And so I think everything. The same way I can remember from morning until night what I've done, and I can recount that. I think the hydrogen atom, which was only manufactured once, which was 13.8 billion years ago, or whoever's talking about the time, has to have a memory over those 14 billion years. So I've always assumed that it was possible not to tap into that kind of memory at that depth, but you can, like a hurricane or a tornado, you can pick up some of the stuff spiraling out of that if your mind is quiet and your body's absolutely still. And so the information from the inside is coming to the outside rather than the other way around.
Wow.
You know? So anyways, I assume, I don't know if that's the case, but I was asked by a high school counselor, what are your career goals my last year of school? And I come from a working class family, so I look at him and I say, what's a career? Wow. And he looks at me and goes, what do you mean, what's a career? I said, what's a career? And he says, well, what are you good at? And I said, I draw a lot because I was encouraged to draw as a kid. And I know a lot about construction. And he goes, stop there. Your major should be architecture. So that's what I majored in.
Okay, so he either was being intuitive or he wanted to move on to the next.
I think he just wanted to move on to the next. But drawing and construction, he immediately said architecture. Okay. And he was spot on because what I became aware of all the capacities that I have, but I was never in a context to bring those out of me. So going to school and hanging around with all the people that I was hanging around with at the time, and still to this day, I try to choose my hanging around carefully, or if I don't, I leave rather quickly. Not rather quickly, but I'm, and it's not, anyways, I've been wanting, this is the only thing I ever wanted to do because I didn't know how to do anything else.
Well, actually, similar to when if you're around people that you're not jiving with, let's say, and then you want to leave, is it similar with spaces?
Yeah. Yeah, I can pick things up, and the human body is picking up data, not information, picking up data 360.
Right.
And it brings in 10 million bits of information every second, and we use infinitesimal amount of that. So when I'm in a space, I can immediately feel whether it's comfortable to me physically,
mm-hmm.
what the proportions are, and it's not like body temperature. Mm-hmm. I mean, you could look at a building and tell whether or not the intentions of why that building was made are worth exploring it anymore.
Oh, wow.
And so because there's so little time to know everything about everything, which is what my quest is,
okay.
I try to choose my spots because I know that it's not possible. Yeah.
Wow. And so as I was saying in the monologue about people healing faster potentially in a space surrounded by trees and light and what have you, if it were a hospital, or feeling a life that's much more serene, yeah. if they're in a place where their voice isn't reverberating off of walls and bouncing around here and there, that those spaces create life, or life creates those spaces, or how do you look at it?
Spaces are a medium. The same way water is the medium for fish, space and ultimately light is basically our medium.
Wow.
And like you bounce light, we know that fiber optics, light carries data, carries information, let's say, eventually.
Right.
Even when light is bouncing off of things, it's carrying information from whatever it's bouncing off of into our eyes, and then triggers memory, and then you're able to figure out what it is you're looking at. The hospital story that you were telling was describing a place that you're basically immersed in light, and light is not only energy, that eventually it leads to poetry, and so your body sort of naturally takes to the changing of light, and your thoughts change subtly if you're paying attention, if you're present with it. The space, if spaces are made, when you're designing just about everything, you have to be centered on the people that are going to be inhabiting the space. Whereas most things, the primary framework for making decisions has to do with financial modeling, risk assessment, and speed of construction.
Which was what Mark was alluding to.
And pretty much everything you look at right now that's under construction is that.
Mm.
And then they do skin jobs. And if you look at the apartment buildings, you'll see a lot of mimicking going on, because things are moving faster than thought. And so you'll see buildings that are repeating other buildings over and over and over again.
So a skin job would be like a facade?
Just a facade, yeah. Mm-hmm. Like all the housing. All the housing, there's very little, there are variations on standard units that are predicated on people living situations that no longer exist. Yeah, two-bedroom apartments that are designed for a white nuclear family.
Wow.
Okay, where do you find apartments for foodies? Where do you find apartments for strangers that are sharing? Where do you find apartments for three generations of family that have to live in the same place?
Wow.
Out of necessity or out of choice, but mostly out of necessity these days because of the economy. So nobody's really challenging the program. The program is really essential to be challenged. And when we say program, it has to do with how people inhabit and use space.
Wow.
Like schools, for instance. Schools right now are still in the dark ages. They're basically based on an industrial factory model.
Mm-hmm.
So that when immigrants came to America, they had to read the manuals for the work that was being done in factories. And in order for them to read the manuals, they had to go to school. And so what happened is that education became standardized.
And so, like, the school desks and the all in a row and all of that,
yeah,
it is mimicking a factory. I never thought of that.
Yeah, when you look at those photographs of people that are making iPhones in China, and it looks like Raiders of the Lost Ark.
Interesting.
You'll see large architectural offices like that. You'll see large corporations like that still.
Right.
If the organization first were thought of as humans are we're learning machines. It's an evolutionary imperative that you have to constantly be aware of your surroundings and you have to learn.
Mm-hmm.
And when you're learning the same thing over and over again, what's really critical these days is, and this has to do with all forms of development. It can go from intellectual to emotional to spiritual. You have to basically awaken curiosity. You have to cultivate imagination.
Mm.
And then you have to give people the courage again to take chances, to take risks.
Mm.
That's the only way you have real invention.
You not only think that the school classroom structure and all that is archaic, but you actually think the way of teaching or the way of looking at a student is archaic. And when we come back, I want to explore that a little bit with you, because I never heard what you said while we were talking earlier, and I can't wait for the audience to hear as well. So we'll be talking more with Michael Rotondi when we come back a little later on. Live music with Liz Fole, all on the Life Changes Show, right after this.
Hey guys, so I'm here to tell you about a little thing called the DNA Institute. You probably haven't heard of it yet, but I wanted to let you in on it because it completely changed my life. A few years ago, I was about 30 pounds overweight. I wanted a career, good friends, a loving family, and financial success, and unfortunately, I didn't have any of it, so I ate. Within 6 months, the DNA Institute made me lose 30 pounds. This is not a lie. That completely happened. It doesn't matter what exactly your situation is or how much you have to lose. The Institute will get you to your goal weight. It's not a supplement or a diet pill. It's a real doctor-prescribed custom medical treatment. It rebalances your hormones, heals your metabolic and digestive system, and makes your higher functioning brain so loud that it becomes impossible to overeat when you're full. Whew, it's a mouthful, but yours won't be. So many of my friends and family turned to the DNA Institute after they saw my success, and all of them lost their desired weight, ranging from 8 to 60 pounds. I promise you, this is different than anything you've ever tried before. They've been in Beverly Hills since 1982. You can even give them a visit, drop by, or just head to their website, DNA.com, that's DIENNET.com, to learn more and get your customized formula made today.
You are listening to The Life Changes Show, live from Studio NoHo on the BBS Radio Network. You can hear tonight's show and all our past shows, which include luminaries such as The Green Children, Dan Millman, Hot Rod Fuller, and Mike Marino, on our archive page at LifeChangesNetwork.com. You can also follow us online via Twitter at Life Changes Show and Facebook at The Life Changes Show.
We are The Life Changes Show. I'm Filippo, sitting here with Mark and, of course, our guest, Michael Rotondi, internationally recognized architect, educator, principal of Roto Architects, and actually co-founder of SciArch, which is a school for architects, right? And so I imagine that the philosophy I was referring to before the break is you used in your school. Please mm-hmm. tell us about that one of those philosophies.
School, SciArch, Southern California Institute of Architecture, we started it many, many years ago. And we were angry at a university. And what some of us were fortunate to figure out is how to turn anger into joy.
How to turn anger into joy.
Yes. Joy is the flip side of anger.
Okay.
And we were motivated primarily just from the day you're born. Mm-hmm. And unfortunately, a lot of people till the day you die, you're motivated by fear. A grading system is fear. You do this you're going to go to hell. Mm. You better do this or your father's going to find out about it. So there's always some right. negative reinforcement. And I wondered in particular whether or not it was possible to motivate people just for the sheer joy of doing things and the discovery that comes with that.
Mm.
And so in the early years of SciArch, it was the infrastructure, which has to be set up first, allows us to live our lives in a certain way to bring out the best in us. And then the school was set up with the objective of creating we created the conditions so that people can be their best selves.
Wow.
And then at the same time, it would if you're stressed, you can't be creative. Mm. It's like that. You know, you just, nothing comes out. If you can put somebody in a safe space and you can make them not only feel comfortable, but feel like they belong.
Oh.
And that any chances that they take are going to be welcomed as opposed to they're going to be in trouble for taking risks.
Mm.
And you're rolling the dice all the time.
Mm.
And so we decided, we said, let's start our own school. We don't get along with those guys. How long is it going to take to change their minds? Immediately I'm thinking, how long is it going to take to change the mind of my mother, strong-willed Italian Catholic woman? And I said, how much time is going to be left over to do what we wanted?
No, we don't have that much.
No time. It's like zero time. So that's when we said, why don't we just start our own school? And the great advantage of being young is that you don't know what you're talking about.
Mm.
And at the same time, you believe anything that you can imagine is possible.
Mm.
And you go for it. And then just by sheer willpower and energy and being in a tribe of others that really want this thing to happen, you make it work against the odds. It doesn't matter. You don't have any money. It doesn't matter. Your building is leaking. None of that matters. It's just about doing the architecture. And the architecture was really working on yourself, working on a project, working on the school, and working on the city all at the same time.
Wow.
And that's when we began to see that there's a much bigger ecosystem than the one we had been told, which was just environmental. So everything being – it used to be that we were able to think in a more comprehensive way. Everything was connected to everything else. Everything was interdependent. And
used
then
to be when? You mean like the indigenous people or
– Yeah, it's mostly the earth that's when I – there was a point in my life when by any measure or all accounts, I was doing fine. But then there was something inside of me that it was basically brought back. My migraine headaches were coming back.
Okay.
And there's no reason they should be coming back because our practice was doing well. A lot of fame, but no buildings yet.
You have all the things that you're supposed to have.
Yeah, the school is doing well. Yeah. I'm directing the school at this time.
Mm.
And what I discovered is that there was I didn't know what it was, but now in retrospect, I'd say that I had a feeling of being vapid. There was some emptiness inside. And what I discovered, the emptiness was I needed to bring spiritual back into my life, not religion. I needed to bring spiritual.
Mm-hmm.
And what, to me, allows the spiritual to at least be at the entry point is integrating the head back to the body. And the mind, basically, to the empathy that comes from the body.
Hmm.
And then I said, okay, well, who had a total system? It was indigenous people. So I started making runs to basically the Four Corners area and seeing what the Navajo and the Hopi were doing and reading. I always had a habit of reading the stories in the places that they describe. It could be Moscow Diaries, it could be Baudelaire's Paris Spleen, but in this case, I'm reading basically the stories of the Navajo and the Hopi.
Mm-hmm.
The fiction of the story is basically the spiritual component. The fact of the story are the physical geographical places where those things happened.
Wow, yeah.
And so that's when I became interested in weaving fact and fiction together.
Into architecture.
Yeah.
And space.
Everything, basically.
Yeah.
Everything. I was looking for every opportunity to basically weave fact and fiction together.
Wow.
I mean, the first virtual reality is basically the mind's eye. It's the third eye. Because you're seeing things there before you see them outside of yourself.
Mm. Interesting.
Now, because of a couple of generations of using computers, students in particular have... The third eye has gone dormant because the third eye is now the monitor.
Wow.
And now they're in a reactive mode. even if it's a nanosecond, it's reacting to something that is showing you based on the software and your manipulation or modification of that software. It shows you something before you see it in the third eye.
Wow.
I thought that when the third eye goes, lots of other things start to go dormant as well. And so I started figuring out, how do I invent projects for the students to work on that are both analog and digital, that force them to not only think about, what do I know now, what did I know when I was a child? And
yes.
How can I tap into that
yes.
and bring it forward so that the adult will help me solve that problem? So that's where play
nice.
Enters. That's where game-based learning comes in. For instance, I want the students to know, in order to be able to anticipate a world without work, which is basically automation. Everybody is sort of afraid of being put out of work because of automation,
mm-hmm.
right? Anything that's highly repetitive can be automated immediately. What can't be highly repetitive and what can't be digitized is basically deep intuition and making leaps of faith creatively.
Wow.
In order to make those leaps of faith creatively, you got to get the courage back. In order to have something for the courage to do, you basically got to get the imagination back, which is the third eye.
Wow.
And then prior to that, you got to get curiosity back.
Curiosity, imagination, and courage.
Yeah.
Wow.
It leads to creativity.
Since we're talking philosophically, actually, and what I noticed when we were talking...
I ground these all in very practical ways, though, because when I'm teaching or talking,
right.
I want people to basically experience it, physically experience. So world without work, automation, they have to know technology. If I'm going to lecture on technology, they're going to start snoring in about 10 minutes. So
okay.
I say, okay, I'm going to have them design a board game, and the board game has four levels. Each of the levels, it starts with the first industrial revolution, goes through the second and the third, and ends in the fourth. For them to design the board game and to the game mechanics and the challenges, which their friends are going to play, they know that they have to know all of the things that were happening in the first industrial revolution. How did the guy come up with steam? And then what can steam do? How does the factories work? So the characters that they invent, the avatars that they invent, have to go through the game, do the board game, and they have to pick up these skill sets and literacies in order to get level up to the second.
Based on facts that they learned from the past.
And so I got to know this stuff. Otherwise, the game doesn't work. As opposed to, I got to know this stuff. Otherwise, Roto's going to give us a bad grade.
Because I'm going to be tested on it.
I'm going to be tested on it.
Right.
No tests. I teach design studios where there's no test. The test is in the work itself.
Wow. And you also believe that students inherently come with something, you know?
Oh, yeah. Being around young people, as long as I've been around young people, as I've gotten older, I'm continually reminded of the ways I used to be able to think.
Ooh.
And think about.
Right.
But what I bring to it, whatever they're interested in, I can expand the context for them understanding that. And it took me years myself to take what I know, and then just through life practice, you get into a bigger and bigger context. You might remember some of those same things.
Mm.
When the ideas are fresh, I'm trying to expand the context so they can begin to see, how many different ways can I think about this? How many different ways can I approach this problem? So that's where the mentoring is, as opposed to, you're empty, be quiet, I'm going to fill you up. When my son was born is when I started reading A Brief History of Time by Stephen Hawking.
Mm-hmm.
I was looking at a photograph of Stephen Hawking, and I'm looking at my son, who's lying there like a veg, and I'm looking at Stephen Hawking, who looks like a veg.
Interesting.
And if I didn't know any better, I would be talking gibberish to Stephen Hawking the same way. I'd never talked gibberish to my son, but the way people think.
Wow.
Right? And I thought, okay, maybe an infant is sort of like Stephen Hawking. Just because you can't express in response to what you heard, maybe you still can retain that. And maybe you express it 5 years out. So I would do things with my son from infancy, probably even till today. He's 40.
Probably still till today. I have a feeling.
He doesn't. He actually, whatever he learned from me, the techniques he learned from me, he uses to teach me now.
Ah, nice.
Because
he's learning things that you haven't.
If we had a if you and I had a conversation about, I would immediately want to start asking you questions in order to not have to read all the books that you've read.
Right.
So you're a kind of a cliff notes for me.
Nice.
So there's a way of having conversations where instead of letting people know everything you've done,
right,
you figure, okay, they don't need to know that. I know what I've done. I want to know what Filippo's done.
Wow.
And I want to basically take that and incorporate it into what I already know and give it a spin. Because what I do know is that the one thing, it came to me years ago, that you have to have the courage to change your mind in light of new experience so that you're continually growing.
You have to have the courage to change your mind in light of new experiences. Wow. Thank you. I feel like we need to frame that. And we're going to go to a quick break, but we'll be back with more Michael Rotondi. And actually, we're gonna keep on the philosophy as we talk a little bit about problems and solving problems and what problems can be, how one can look at problems when we come back. And if you're interested in learning more about, for example, Roto Architects, you could go to rotoark.com. And we'll be back not only with Liz Fole and live music in our next segment, but our Ask Dorothy segment, all coming up on the Life Changes show right after this.
The Little Dog That Could is the fantastically true story of a man and a little dog that came into his life as his mentor to help him understand the world beyond his human senses and to experience life, love, and healing beyond his human understanding. Best-selling author Filippo Voltaggio, who currently hosts the highly regarded Life Changes show, is an internationally known singer, speaker, and life coach. Filippo offers up his own story, how one little surprise package in fur and four legs transformed his life unexpectedly forever and furthered his path of self-discovery. In The Little Dog That Could, Filippo brings to life the meaning of the adage, when the student is ready, the teacher appears. Through the reading of this book, you will experience the journey of real miracles that transcend time, space, and logic while gaining practical tools that will help you navigate your way. The Little Dog That Could is available through Amazon and Barnes & Noble. For more information, visit thelittledogthatcould.com. That's thelittledogthatcould.com.
You are listening to The Life Changes Show. You can hear tonight's show and all our past shows, which include luminaries such as The Green Children, Dan Millman, Hot Rod Fuller, and Mike Marino on our archive page at lifechangesnetwork.com. You can also follow us online via Twitter at Life Changes Show and Facebook at The Life Changes Show.
We are back. I'm Filippo, sitting here with Mark, and our guest, Michael Rotondi, we've been talking about architecture, actually. He is an internationally recognized architect, and he's a founder of a school and an architectural group, and yet everything seems to be philosophical, and my mind went how brilliantly you said before the show that as an architect you try and solve problems, but you actually look at problems as something other than most people. And what was that? How did you describe that?
Problems for me are like a sandbox.
Mm-hmm.
You know.
If we could only look at our problems that way.
It is. I mean, every problem, even when I was going through my darkest periods, I never hesitated to go to the darkest places.
Really?
And then while I was there. The thing about being born into a world and you spend the first 4 months in an incubator, you're in the world, but you're observing it. Ooh. So you're not really participating yet.
Right.
And so that's probably, to some extent, why I feel very comfortable in solitude and never feel lonely. Mm. And I can be an observer and a participant at the same time.
Uh-huh. Well, not only, okay, so you just described problems as a sandbox, which that's, you know, crazy to most people. But let's go deeper.
Okay, I'll give you a simple a problem, a hypothetical. If I were designing a house for a blind man, a blind person, for instance, okay, He has, how can I design a house that engages his other senses?
Right.
Yeah. So even every day you can say, I'm going to change basically the sound that's made when he's walking on the floor by going from carpet to stone.
No.
Right. So then he knows all of a sudden there's a transition.
You're in the other room.
Yeah.
Or
so that's an immediate space. Thing. If I want to go a little bit more long term, I can do seasonal. You basically put a tree that flowers and has great fragrance at only springtime.
Wow.
And then you put it on the side of the house where breezes are going to come through, so next to a window that can be opened so that the breezes will take that fragrance through. And he goes, oh, my goodness, it must be March.
Wow.
So there's lots of ways that you can solve a problem.
I can't imagine living in a space. If you've thought that much through for a blind person, what about an actual seeing person?
Yeah.
There's so much.
It's possible. It depends on who the client is, but and sometimes you don't talk about the ideas because they think you're spending too much time thinking, you know. But in the end, what you want them to experience are things that they may have experienced years before, but they hadn't been in a place in order to experience that. For instance, working with the Lakota Indians, the chief in his office in this building, we were basically making a new campus for them for education.
Mm-hmm.
When they started closing in the walls, he gets really claustrophobic because he's used to basically horizon plane, 360 degrees all the way around.
Right.
He's complaining, and I said, Lino, be patient. If you don't like it, we'll rip the wall out and just put all glass.
Mm-hmm.
Well, what I had done was across his entire office, which was about 22 feet, I calculated when he sits down at his size at his desk, he looks out this horizontal panoramic window, and he's got equal amount of sky and equal amount of land.
Wow.
So he basically, and he looked out, and that's one of their... One of their most sacred symbols is called the Kapemni, which is a horizontal line, and you just take a very narrow X, which is basically the width, the diameter of a teepee, and you bring it from.
Oh, wow.
And so that's sky and that's earth, and it basically crosses on the horizon, which is the basically the line and the zone and the point of creation, which is again right here. It's the heart chakra.
The heart chakra.
He sits down and he just startled. He says, oh, my goodness, I've never seen the horizon before. He'd lived his whole life with the horizon. He just never saw it like that.
Wow.
Because it was basically all sky and all earth.
Wow.
And then from that moment on, he'd sit in his office and stare out at the horizon and start to think about what he was going to be working on.
Brilliant. Yeah. Brilliant. You know, we're coming to the end of our segment. I know this is not the end of our conversations. I look forward to many more conversations with you. But I'd like to end on this note, because not only did you describe a problem as a sandbox, but you also said something to the effect of, if a problem isn't complex enough, Then what did you say?
Make it more complex.
You make it more complex.
Okay, I was always fascinated with how James Bond would work himself into a corner, knowing that this was a lethal corner, and then he'd work himself back out again.
Okay.
And then I started looking at the heroes or the idols, architects, of those people that would invent problems that weren't there, but then work it in such a way that you imagine that problem had always existed, right?
Wow, yeah.
So sometimes problems, just take movement, for instance. Because I spent so much time as an altar boy.
Okay, where is this going?
I wasn't particularly religious. I loved the ritual.
Uh-huh.
And I loved, most of all, the processions.
Uh-huh.
The procession of even coming out from the green room out onto the altar.
Uh-huh. I don't think they called it the green room.
No, they didn't.
The vestibule or something. movement. And the incense and the candles.
Yeah, let's say movement. You're here and now you're there, as opposed to when you look at historically, how did you transition from a public space into the private space? You did that with a porch. The porch was the space that mediates the outer world and the inner world. In a Japanese temple, they call it a veranda. And the veranda is when you're sitting on the steps, the big, long overhang covers you, and you sit there as the sun is going down, as the temperature is dropping. If you're fortunate enough to be in Kyoto, sitting on a veranda, looking out at the borrowed landscape, at the time of year when everything is beginning to turn, it's like listening to Thoreau on Walden Pond, when all of his senses kicked in at the exact same time. My body is one sense tonight. That is synesthesia. When what you hear, what you feel from the temperature, you're in a transitional state because the world is in between one time and another, one place and another. The trees are in between one season and another.
Wow.
So everything is basically shifting.
Yeah.
How do you capture that moment?
Wow.
How do you capture that moment? So in architecture, which is maybe not so practical, but you could begin to look at what are all of the potential thresholds that I can make it possible for somebody to experience when they're moving from their car to the front porch into the house, and then the house is beginning to unfold as you're walking through it.
Wow. Wow. And you said it in there, and you wrapped it in the word synesthesia, which I love that word. And this is I'll be taking this home with me. But you said before the show that you want, if it's not complex enough, you want to make it even more complex, like you just did with all these different processes, because you want to be able to use all your skills.
A literal complexity. I'm talking to a man. We're doing a house in New Jersey for him, and it's in the design phase. When we're talking about the house, he keeps on sort of reclaiming the places that he's already been, houses that he already knows. And instead of me arguing with him, I'll just take notes, and then I'll say, "Tell me about what you did today, David." And David, he invented a business management. He put business management theory and business management practice together. So it's like taking Peter Drucker and putting him together with somebody who goes from analytics to actually somebody who goes in and restructures your company.
Okay.
He was a pretty brilliant guy. Anyways, he would talk about a corporation like Mobil Oil, for instance, is a learning organism.
Okay.
So you think of people as basically a learning machine. We're learning machines. If you begin to think of people in an organization as being responsive to whatever the information is that you're putting out there, like Hansel and Gretel, you know, you leave, they follow that, and all of a sudden they find their way home. There's ways of positing information into a large collective strategically, and then somebody picks it up. Because if you're working like what I did at SIARC, you're working with very strong-willed people. They don't like to be told what to do. They want to discover it for themselves. And so I basically had to figure out how do I let them know what I want them to do without exerting any authority over them.
Oh, wow. Well,
and
yes.
Getting them to basically – so you know.
Clever. So what does this house look like?
I'd say draw these or tell me about the company that you're working for and the people. And he would describe all these people in a dynamic moving around in a three-dimensional space.
Okay.
And he's saying, you tell somebody over here does such and such, and then they talk into somebody who's in a whole other sort of knowledge domain, and all of a sudden, and then there's all this information that's feeding into the system. I'm diagramming it. I'm diagramming these complex diagrams that have to do with
that you're picking up while he's talking.
Yeah, I'm drawing what he's talking about, basically. Yeah. And then finally, I look at the drawing and I say, hey, David, you know what would be cool is if we could make your house we can use these diagrams, these complexity they're geometries, but they were complex diagrams. If we can, if I can work on these and figure out how to make your house based on these diagrams, instead of it just being basically just a three-dimensional orthogonal grid. And he goes, what do you mean? So I kept explaining it to him.
What do you mean?
I kept explaining it to him. The same way you can draw a grid, you can draw lines that actually move omnidirectionally from different points.
Right?
So they're basically going into the space. And then you can set up increments that are moving both in the horizontal, the X and the Y.
Okay.
The vertical is called the Z. That is based on music. So you can do like
that is based on music.
Yeah, you basically look at music notation, and you basically set up increments of, let's say, 4 and 5, 4 and 5, 4 and 5, and then every fifth increment or every fourth increment, you basically got a superimposition of 20. You know. So, anyways, you could set up a whole system and then set up hierarchy of what lines are the most important. That's where certain walls go. Lines that are perhaps less important, that's where the windows in that wall go.
Wow.
Right? And the whole objective for me was to make it possible for him to decipher this and decode it over time. So he says to me, I'm open for this if you can do the following. I want this to be, if it's going to be unfamiliar to my eyes, I want it to be familiar to my body. Can you do that? And my I said, of course I can do that. Of course I can do that. And then I get back to my hotel and said, what did I just agree to? Yeah. Well, it basically what it does is, architecture, in a situation like this, this is basically a window into Wonderland. Because now I'm reading all of the things that the body is able to intuit without the eyes being present.
Wow.
And that's when I started.
I want to see the house.
What did it recall? Well, when you read about the historians that wrote about the Renaissance when proportioning was used for the first time, which is in Florence, they believed that your body could feel in a space that's proportioned.
Mm.
It could feel those proportions without being conscious of it.
Mm.
And comfort begins to set in when the length to width to height ratio is correct.
Right.
If it's too short, then you feel compressed. Right. If it's too tall, now.
So like at the beginning of the show, I was talking about these houses that were monstrosities that really felt uncomfortable and was uncomfortable to live in, talk in.
One final, because I know you guys got other things to do. I was designing a meditation center. And these are I also discovered that it doesn't matter how much I read, this is what's called tacit knowledge. The only way I could know how to design a retreat center for people that are going to be in silence for 3 months to 3 years.
Oh.
And in silence means no eye contact, no talking to any other people.
Okay.
Right? Your body becomes very, very still and your mind becomes very, very quiet. And you're not falling asleep. You actually see more. You can actually see more and hear more. It's much more acute, which I also discovered the hard way. When I was asking about, okay, let's talk about the meditation hall. Let's talk about proportions. And he goes, okay, it should be tall but not too tall. It should be short but not too short. And I said, okay, if it's too tall, what happens? He goes, oh, it's the Christian thing, ascension. You go up. Okay, what happens if it's too short? It compresses you. It pushes you into the ground too much. And he says it has to be just enough and nothing more. And when he said that after this, it was a long conversation with this really extraordinary guy. What came to mind was the first picture that I saw of the lunar landing module that was sitting just hovering above the moon.
Okay.
And I couldn't tell whether it was landing or taking off.
Yeah.
And I figured that's what I'm looking for.
Oh, wow.
I'm looking for that space where you become weightless.
What an image.
Yeah.
Being able to translate visual and you mentioned music and art, and before the show you even mentioned math and all that, and into space and beyond into living, This feels like something that is coming together at a time where it needs to come together. Actually, the next time that we are able to get together to talk, I'd love to talk with you, Michael, about how you said we as humanity have gone from faith-based to reason and da-da-da to now we are focusing on humanity as we come out of economy, the age of humanity. So Michael, I look forward to a future conversation, but in the meantime, RotoArk, if you want to learn more about Michael and the architects that he works with and that work with him, RotoArk, RotoArk.com. Michael, what a pleasure it is to finally get to meet you and talk with you.
Yeah, this is a great pleasure.
Thank you so much.
You're welcome.
And with that, we have our Ask Dorothy segment. Dorothy Lee Donahue.
Dear Dorothy, my name is Sandy and I live in Los Altos. I recently had a spontaneous experience that suggested to me that I had a past life in Lemuria, and then a psychic said I had a past life in Egypt. I've always been drawn to the water, and I've always wanted to go to the ancient pyramids. How can I find out more about my past lives? The possibilities really intrigue me.
Sandy, thank you for this great question. I believe that all of us on Earth have had past lives, and many past lives at that. I, too, have had spontaneous glimpses of past lives, and when I've questioned my guides about them, I get messages saying that the focus should be on being the best me this lifetime that I can possibly be. I believe that we all have soul families, and I know that many of the people that I love the most have been with me in past lives and are with me once again. Some have played challenging roles this lifetime, and I have allowed them to distract me from my mission and purpose. This time around, I have co-created many challenges, and I'm doing my best to handle them and rise above them. So instead of being consumed about your past life, let's be willing to understand who we have come to be now. A great place to start this process is with Dan Millman's helpful book, The Life You Were Born to Live. Dan believes, as do I, that we choose our birthday so we can bring certain numerical frequencies with us to help us become who we're born to be. This book helped me understand my challenges and my gifts, and after doing the work on all of my numbers and the work with the spiritual laws that are most prominent in my numbers, I have managed to make sense of why I've made some of the less than elegant choices I made. And now I do my best work with the positive aspects of my numbers, and my life has definitely improved. I believe that any past life information that is vital for you to know will be revealed, much as these previous glimpses have come about. So let's work on being in the present and being the best that we can be. And Sandy, if you're drawn to go to the pyramids, then plan a trip. Maybe you'll have another glimpse there. And at the very least, you are fulfilling a wish or a desire in this lifetime. As for Lemuria, if you find it in your travels, please let me know, as I believe I had a life there too.
Thank you, Dorothy. And if you have a question for Dorothy, please write her at askdorothy@lifechangesshow.com.
And we'll be back with our musical guest, Liz Full, in our next segment right after this on The Life Changes Show.
There are self-help seminars costing thousands of dollars guaranteeing miraculous transformations. There are compelling speakers and life-changing weekend experiences where you can walk on fire. They all deliver revelations that guarantee you'll come back for the more expensive revelations filled with even greater wonder next month on Fiji. We get addicted to positive, heartfelt, expensive theater. What we really need is a jumpstart, an awakening. Someone who can give us a reminder that everything we need lies within. Through inspiration and practical knowledge, Dorothy Donahue helps people get grounded and motivated, inspired and energized. It's not just words and affirmations and the power of intention. It's a mindset brought about by a tangible, transcendental experience, an audio-visual, physical, spiritual experience that helps us realize we transform ourselves. We get tools to become the conscious co-creators of lives of unlimited potential. Find out more. Go to DorothyDonahue.com.
The Life Changes Show is a premier radio show presented by the Life Changes Network, which is a company whose team has dedicated their lives not only to positive change, but to helping others observe and embrace, honor, and even celebrate their own changes, thus enabling a more positive, inspired life and helping to create a more positive and inspired world. From everyday people, celebrities, corporate giants, and children, we are here to help and to serve. With heart, integrity, and experience, we bring our message and positive intent into your lives through the Life Changes Show, LifeChangesNetwork.com, and through guest appearances on other inspiring shows and events. If you wish to learn more about Life Changes Life Coaching, a private consultation with one of us, corporate or live event appearances, or if you would like us to appear on your radio or TV shows, please email us at info@LifeChangesNetwork.com.
We're back. I'm Filippo, sitting here with Mark and Dorothy, and of course our guest, Michael Rotondi. And joining us in the studio is singer-songwriter Liz Fole. Liz, welcome to the show.
Thank you
again.
So much. Yeah, I'm so happy to be here.
So happy to have you back. And actually, we've been wanting you back, and your schedule's been so busy. And in fact, you were, what, just in Portland yesterday?
Yeah, yesterday.
And this weekend you're in San Francisco.
Yep.
And on Sunday or Monday you leave for New York for 2 months.
Driving across the country and living in New York for the summer.
So how perfect that you got to be with us today.
Yes.
Thank you so much.
Yeah, I'm excited to be here. I love being here. So.
Well, we love having you. And since you were with us last, you've been doing some new things that you weren't doing at the time, like producing your own music and others.
Yeah, that's been a new thing for me and a really like a wonderful challenge, like kind of like the sandbox thing you were talking about earlier, where it's definitely a stretch in some, you know, I feel like I'm stretching and learning and growing a lot. And it's come from a lot of not knowing how to do things and sitting down and figuring it out and messing up a whole bunch and learning and coming out the other side. And it's been really liberating. And I feel like I'm really finding my sound more and still collaborating in other ways. But it's been a really fun new thing to be just fully in control of the production of it as well. So.
And since we saw you last, you've been asked to produce music for all kinds of other projects and like Comedy Central and the NFL.
Mm-hmm.
And
yeah, I've been doing a lot of stuff.
Exciting.
It's been a fun couple of years, a lot of different clients and projects, and it's super fun because it's all over the place. One day I'll be writing ukulele Christmas songs, and the next day it's dubstep, and the next day it's a creepy version of an Americana song that we were talking about a little earlier.
Yes, we were.
It's so all over the place, but it's fun. It's like cross training, but musically speaking. So
good for you.
Yeah, it's really fun.
Well, let's hear a song. You're here with your guitar, and you're going to accompany yourself in one of your songs that's coming out on the CD project you're working,
right?
Yeah,
I'm working on another batch of tunes, and it should be out. We're doing the finishing work while I'm in New York, so.
You'll let us know so we
absolutely
can help promote. And the CD is going to be called Shallow Water.
Mm-hmm.
What does that refer to?
That's just about, until I really started just kind of saying, all right, screw it, let's go for it. Let's like jump in and learn all these things that I've always wanted to do but was fearful of doing. I had this kind of image in my head of like this beautiful ocean, and I was always just scared to jump in, and I was like walking in up to my ankles or maybe my knees and then like scurrying back out of it.
Mm.
So this song kind of started the whole movement of this next batch of songs about just like, you just gotta jump in. It's better if you just jump in.
So, nice.
Yeah.
Well, so this is the title song on the album. Here is Liz Fole performing live on the Life Changes Show. Here, live from Vortex Dome, LA, Shallow Water.
I'm tired, I'm worn, strung out from the pace. I know I've gotta go, I've been dreaming of open spaces. In my mind I'm already gone, I just need a road to chase. Yeah. I should be under, but I'm standing here just trying to keep things dry. I need a cannonball be swept away in a water dark as wine. Could be dreaming in color, a world of blue instead of black and white. Been wasting time in the same place, counting every single wave, trying to decide the right time to move, wishing that I weren't afraid. I wanna see where the currents lead, pour myself into the tide, lose the ground underneath my feet, if only for a little while. Standing here, just trying to keep things dry. I need a cannonball be swept away in a water dark as wine. Could be dreaming in color, a world of blue instead of black and white. Shallow water.
Thank you,
yeah.
Liz Fohl. That, by the way, Liz is L-I-Z and Fohl is F-O-H-L. Mm-hmm. And that's also important because LizFohl.com is where you can learn more about Liz and catch her. She actually does, you actually do, like over 125 shows a year throughout the country.
Anyway,
at least.
Yeah.
Maybe even internationally. And actually definitely internationally. And I have to say, this afternoon I was enjoying going over the tracks of your songs, not only listening and enjoying them, but just the titles alone. Can I just, yeah. Old Trouble,
oh.
Laugh It Off, Should Have Known Better, Swimming in the Wrong Sea.
Yeah.
I mean, it's like they open up all these, you know, these doors to, oh yeah,
oh,
I totally
great.
Get that.
Thank you. Yeah, my favorite that you mentioned. Well, Swimming in the Wrong Sea is about like growing up in, I grew up in Indiana and in a wonderful community, but there was like this sense of, I was kind of like the only, I was the only one doing kind of what I wanted to, like following my particular path there.
Mm-hmm.
And it kind of felt like, oh, I'm this, like I'm the fish in the pond here. And then I moved to LA and I was like, oh, I'm a tiny little fish in this
mm-hmm.
huge ocean.
Mm-hmm.
The other one you mentioned, Old Trouble, the hook, which just reverberates with me so strongly, is stop looking for a new way to get in old trouble. Because I was doing that.
Wow,
for years.
You got to say that again.
Stop looking for a new way to get in old trouble.
Wow.
So, yeah, I'm glad you enjoyed the titles.
How many? Yeah, but no, I enjoyed the songs too. But the titles alone, and that one, I didn't end up catching that. That is huge. I'll have to listen to that song again.
I think it's a great song.
Yeah,
you should give it a listen.
And so it is. Yeah. Well, we're actually going to get to hear another great song. And this one, I have to ask you, what is this about? Because Out to Get Me?
Yeah, this one's fun. I just, this is more of a fun song. This isn't like a huge, like...
Okay, so it's no Monsters Are Out to Get You.
No, not a mon- I played a lot of piano bars across the country. That's
uh-huh.
what I do. I travel a lot on the weekends. And I was playing at a really fancy steakhouse. And this gentleman came up to me after the show and was very complimentary about music. But long story short, he kind of just started talking about how consumed he is with paranoia and how he is he's a very wealthy individual and he's converted all of his wealth into literal gold bars. And he literally bought a plot of land on a island and he's buried this wealth. And he can't tell him any more than that, of course.
He didn't tell you the island, or
no, didn't tell me the island. Okay. But it was just so interesting.
No, I was just thinking maybe Michael Rotundi could build a house on it for him, or
we
could
find that land. No, I just found myself right. going home and thinking about, like, man, what would it be like to, like, live in that space?
In that head.
You know, maybe not. Maybe he doesn't see it as paranoia. Maybe he sees it as being really prepared, and, you know, whatever it was. So I was just kind of. I thought it was kind of a fun thing. So I tried to write a funky song about it. So.
Well, I can't wait to hear it. Well, here is Liz Fole performing live on the Life Changes Show, broadcasting live from Vortex Dome LA, her song Out to Get Me.
I can't say too much. I'm running low on time. I've got a map in my head. I've got gold on my mind. I've got so many secrets I keep to myself. I don't know who to trust these days, you can't tell. I've been looking for a place to disappear. A tiny island off the coast. Just don't tell anyone you know this. If I told you everything I know, you wouldn't call me crazy. It just seems like everybody's out to get me. Yeah, everybody's out to get me all the time. Everybody's out to get me. Say everybody's out to get me all the time. It's not some crazy theory. I've seen the signs. Been searching for years to find a place to hide. Oh, it's not paranoia, but what can I say? The less they know, the further I can get away. If I told you everything I've seen, you wouldn't call me crazy. It just seems like everybody's out to get me. Everybody's out to get me all the time. Oh, everybody's out to get me. Say everybody's out to get me all the time. Out to get me, everybody's out to get me all the time. Everybody's out to get me. I know somebody's listening on the line. Oh, everybody's out to get me. Said everybody's out to get me all the time. Everybody's out to get me. I know somebody's listening.
A little silly song.
Liz Fole. Like, yeah, I love how you describe it. Just a little silly song. It's
like
fun.
It. It's
you
fun.
Like it. But that poor man, it does sound a little bit like paranoia.
Yeah.
But even though you say in the song it's not. But Liz Fole, thank you so. You know you have a fan in Life Changes. We all are fans of Liz Fole. LIZFOHL.com. We wish you the best in New York, the best in your career. And we look forward to seeing you again in Los Angeles. Liz Fole, thank you. And once again, thank you to Michael Rotundi. That is our show. A big thank you to BBS Radio and our production manager, Doug Newsom, and to our production engineer here at Vortex Dome LA, Kaylin Holmes. On behalf of our executive producer, Dorothy Lee Donahue, and our producer and co-host, Mark Lejeur, I am your host, Filippo Voltaggio, reminding you that as your life changes, like ours surely did tonight, we're here for you. Ciao, everyone.
You have been listening to the Life Changes Show on the BBS Radio Network. Listen live every Monday night at 7 p.m. Pacific Time and visit us online at lifechangesnetwork.com. On Facebook at The Life Changes Show and on Twitter at Life Changes Show. Join us again next week as we consciously explore and embrace the only constant, life changes. The Life Changes Network is an entertainment network. The views and opinions expressed are those of the guests and participants and do not necessarily reflect the views and opinions of Life Changes.